Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
All right, everyone ready? Should we get started?
Yeah, let's fucking go.
What's up? God damn it.
Everyone ready? Somebody fucking lied.
What's up?
Someone was too ready.
Jesus fucking Christ.
They fucking lied.
Dysfunction, that's what I'm talking about.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe, and holy shit, I got the intro out. PartyCast. Tim's here. Purnell's here. Chris is here. Brooks here. Aki's here. How is everybody doing?
Pretty good.
Awful.
Third time's the charm. Awful. Yeah. Why are you awful, Tim?
Fucking amazing.
Why? It's the first day of school. It's the first week of school. God.
It's today.
Isn't that great? Because then you don't have to deal with your kids?
No, I have to deal with everybody else's in a way. I work in a school system.
Oh, you poor schmuck.
Yes.
What is wrong with you?
Lots. But hey, you get to go see AEW this week.
I do. Yeah.
You get to see possibly some of the top stars of the company.
just not the top four, arguably. It's fine. They have lots of good people there.
Maybe. We never know what's going to... has any news officially come out of what's gone down?
Nope.
Nothing?
Nope.
Oh, man, we watched AEW over the weekend, and CM Punk won the championship, and now he might be fired.
Drama. Yeah, there was a lot of drama, wrestling drama this weekend.
Shenanigans ensued.
And yeah, it's been a wild couple of days for that nonsense portion of the world, and I will be in the thick of it again tomorrow night after I was just there. Like 2 months ago, like literally I'm seeing live shows 2 months apart.
I am so jealous that you get to see them like so frequently that they show up in your area.
Dan's going to Toronto next month.
Oh shit. Like,
yeah.
Is he going to tomorrow as well?
Yes.
He's just going he's going to be like Brock Lesnar guy soon.
Yes. Yes. He just has to get on camera making a face at some point, and then he is Brock Lesnar guy, I mean, too.
He is a photogenic son of a bitch, so if they put him on camera...
Let's not be crazy. I mean,
it's the animal.
Yeah.
I just want to
diss him for no reason, that's all.
Lloyd Berry dropping a sub in Twitch. Thank you so much, Lloyd. Good seeing you here. Nine months.
That's messy.
Not a sandwich, Purnell.
But those are tastier.
Are you hungry, Purnell?
Yeah, which is why I should not be eating.
Food.
Yeah, no, food is dangerous. But yeah, subs are great. Both the sub kind and the sub kind. They're all great.
That could
great.
Be sandwich. That could be like a kink thing. Either way, like full agree across the board. Full send.
Carnage dropping a sub as well for 24th month for Carnage.
Oh my god.
Holy shit, everyone's dropping subs tonight.
I know, I had to be like, look at mine, and mine's like the shortest, but I subbed as quick as I could.
I mean, yours isn't the shortest. I'm pretty sure mine's the shortest at, let me see here. Zero. That's right. Yeah, zero.
No one ever gifted you one?
Maybe once a long time ago,
Damn,
but that would have ran out like a long time ago.
Well, Brooke, you dropped like a 6-monther back when we first started, didn't you?
I think so. It's saying like 8 months for me, and I'm like, I don't know. Is that just like LinkedIn? Do we round up or down? Like, I don't know if that's totally accurate, but it's telling me 8 months, and I'm happy about it.
Damn. Time flies when you're having fun. Yeah. Chris, how was your week?
Oh, pretty good. Moving house, so it's been crazy.
Oh, shit.
Move's still going on?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is ongoing.
Didn't it just start this week?
Last weekend, so it's been like a week and a half now, but like, you know, also having to work, so it's not like I get to do all that much.
I mean, you don't have to work, it's just heavily suggested.
Yeah, they want money every month at this new place for god
How
knows
dare
what
they
I know
obedient workers.
You have two pets you're moving with. Is that right? Is just the two cats?
Three. We have three cats.
Okay. Sheesh.
What happened there?
Yeah, we kind of grabbed up a big boy tuxedo cat from who was like kind of hanging around the apartment complex and stuff.
That's cool.
So you just picked up a stray. Okay.
Just got floor cat.
That's kind of how we do.
I think that's how all cat people get cats. You abducted
someone else's cat.
Maybe you had a second cat I didn't know about, because I think I knew about the tuxedo cat. That's the most recent addition. And then Wilfred is the orange cat, or?
And Moxie, the tiny black cat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she, yeah, you might have not seen her yet, but I posted about her at some point. Yeah, she's a little bitty.
Cool.
She's three and very, very, very small. And, yeah, she's fun. She's skittish, but she really likes playing too. So you kind of don't know if she's running away from you because she's being skittish or because she wants to like ambush you.
Chase me, chase me.
Yeah. But yeah, they all hate each other. We're kind of getting them all used to living with other cats. Yeah.
That's the joy of cats. I'm being territorial and going after
and
each other.
And knocking all your breakable shit off of stuff.
Oh, yeah, we stopped having breakable stuff like a long time ago. Nothing breakable around here.
I'm amazed at how well I have kept the cats off of my shelves.
Yeah.
I'm amazed that 90% of your collectibles aren't in pieces, to be honest.
Well, some of them are coated in piss, so that it's not all sunshine and shorts.
Well, yeah.
Well, I don't know which is worse, covered in piss or just broken. The ones that get peed on, we throw away.
Punk is an asshole. Yeah, our one cat, Punk, he has urinary issues.
That's funny how that keeps happening.
I know, right? He's named after CM Punk, too.
I was wondering.
But yeah, he has like urinary disease, and he'll sometimes go out of the box, and sometimes that means on our stuff. So it's not fun.
He's thinking outside the box.
My cat used to like aggressively pee on some of my dad's stuff. Like, this is obviously when I was younger. The cat, I don't have a cat now. They like gets in the car and goes to my parents' house with a ruthless aggression. No, it's just like sometimes, like, I don't know. That cat and my dad did not get along. So yeah, sometimes my cat would just take it out on like his coffee maker or whatever. And I was just kind of, and then my dad would throw him out of the house, and then I'd let him back into the house through my bedroom window, and we just cozy up for the night.
Aww.
Nice. That's cute. Yeah, the cats are fortunately good about that. They just, you know, they're jerks to each other. But you know, they keep the body fluids in the litter boxes where they belong.
I don't say for having 13, I'm amazed we only have one that goes outside the box.
Yeah, you're operating on a whole different level that I will not get to.
Oh, you say that.
I say that, but
we said
you're
that
already
too.
A cat person who's picked up a stray. It's going to happen.
Well, our original cat was a stray too.
There you see, then it's going to happen. You should know that by now.
See, it starts with one,
and then it goes to 50.
Yeah.
It goes to 3, then it goes to 13. It's just
fortunately, we're not in we're not at an apartment complex this time, so there's not quite as many strays wandering around.
You'll still find a way. You're a cat person. That's what you do.
Has anyone ever had the thing happen where a cat just showed up in your house that you aren't familiar with? Like, I've seen that online. No. It's like, oh, well, we came home and my wife is like, oh, why'd you get the cat today? It's like, what cat? It's like, oh, I thought you got a cat. No, we just have
a
cat
now. I
like
that she was that chill to be like, oh, cool, there's a cat. I'll just assume this was supposed to happen. I like that.
Yeah, I've had a cat never did up. That.
Well, no. You got me a cat. No.
No, that's when you say, of course I did. Yes, it was the best gift ever. I'm glad you realized that.
Yeah, I'm amazed that has never happened to us, where we just like open a door and a cat runs in or something. I mean, we've opened a door and drug cats in, but
you live here now.
You're ours.
I bought you a little hat.
God, no.
One of our oldest Twitch emotes is the one cat that is no longer with us, Kitty, wearing a bumblebee cap.
Nice.
It's adorable.
Oh, I never noticed that was a bumblebee before.
Oh, yeah, I see Kitty
here. It's a bumblebee cap.
Very cute.
Brooke, how was your week?
That's pretty good. Can't complain. No Elden Ring here, so it wasn't that good. But might even pull a Purnell and start playing Elden Ring before the podcast is over. No, wait. Wait a little bit.
Oh, man. Okay, did we cover everyone? Anyone else have anything to say, or should we dive in review?
I didn't say anything yet.
I don't think he asked Purnell.
I asked Purnell how he was doing.
No, you didn't. You were like, Purnell, fuck that guy. And I was like, no,
technically, I let everybody know how you were doing earlier.
Well, I guess there's one more thing worth mentioning, because my day did suck, but then something surprising happened when I got home.
What happened?
Two surprising things happened. I got home to an envelope that was in my mailbox. It was like, I thought it was just typical junk mail, because it was like, you know, this is about your escrow. And I'm like, oh boy, here we go, some bullshit about trying to get me out of money. Turns out, no, I was the first time since buying this stupid house, I got a refund on my mortgage payment.
Hell
so
yeah.
Nice.
$600 check came in the mail.
You know what you do? Just put it back in your mortgage.
Most likely, either
that's
that
what I did.
Mm-hmm. It's like, wow, this is nice. Like, it's basically between, because I don't have any bills I need to pay right now, but at the same time, I have a goal I'm trying to hit. So it's like, I could still use it towards that. But I could, you know, or put it towards that. Either way, though, it's money I didn't have that I got now. And I was like, huh, that's nice to see.
That you're soon to not have again.
That's if I put it on the mortgage. Otherwise, it's going to go into some compounding or something, some form of interest. I don't know.
Put it back into more houses.
God, if I was making that kind of freaking money. Then again, honestly, if I had the means, if I was skilled enough to repair homes and stuff, I'd do something like that. That's what my dad did years ago.
That's cool.
And it helped out. Like, basically, it's like, if you can repair your own stuff and fix your own things and replace stuff, well, all the overhead you'd be spending paying these, like, places, these people extra money to do all the work is gone. So you can do all the work yourself. So suddenly, boom, I'm making bank on top of bank. And it's amazing.
When I was doing the piano moving gig, like, seriously, I would be taking, like, a Steinway to, like, somebody's like $1 million mansion. Is like, oh, who's this person? Oh, they own a plumbing company.
Mario?
Yeah, because that's the thing.
Plumbers make bank with how much they charge.
Mario would not buy a piano. He was too traumatized.
I mean, there's a lot of money in that kind of stuff. You figure everybody needs a plumber. Everybody needs an electrician. And even if it's not a particularly a frequent need, eventually someone's going to need it. And there's enough people that could somewhat need it eventually that there's competition. Plumbing is especially funny to me, because I feel like after dealing with it a little bit, plumbing is something that you could probably do if you put a little bit of effort into it. But one, nobody wants to risk damaging their property and making a more expensive mess. And two, when it comes down to working with toilets, nobody wants to get down the toilets. Changing that wax ring, fuck that. So suddenly, you're charged a couple hundred, you charge like $60 an hour to do something.
Way
that
more than that, but yeah.
I was trying to be nice about it, but yeah, they can't hit you for whatever they want. And what are you going to tell them? No.
Hey, buddy, come work where I shit.
Exactly. It's like, and the thing is, like, I'm charging you X amount per hour. Almost anything they say, you're like, well, he is going near the toilet. I'm not going. It's worth it. Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it.
Which is really funny that, you know, you consider the, pay gap and whatnot. Like, I've had a job where I've had to get, you know, basically clean puke out of a urinal, and that was for $6.15 in the day.
Oh, fuck that.
Oh yeah, yeah. My nephew had a job like that at Target. He got hired at Target to, like, basically they told him he's gonna do like general customer service and stuff like that, and he's like, okay, I can do that. And he once he got in there, he's like, okay, we need to start cleaning the toilet. He's like, fuck you, no I'm not. I didn't come here to clean bathrooms. He quit on the spot. I was like, I'm not cleaning these damn bathrooms.
Hey, good for him.
I was a theater projectionist. I wasn't even supposed to be down there.
Wow. Exactly. That's how they get you. It's like, yay, your job is to run the projector. Oh, don't look now, but we're low on staff. Go clean that puke.
Yeah.
Go make some hot dogs.
Clean the puke. I'm skilled at running the projector, and now you're skilled at scooping poop. Get out there.
I worked one day at a Dick's Sporting Goods doing deliveries because they wanted me to clean the bathroom in between deliveries. I'm like, that's not what I signed up for. And they're like, well, you're going to do it. And I'm like, well, you're going to find someone else then. See you later.
Hell yeah.
No one wants to work anymore. Yeah. What the fuck?
We got some good foreshadowing nonsense master going on here. We got like, I'm going to be bringing these themes back for those notes. So get ready.
I know what you're over there scheming about.
Very real. Takes me back to my service industry roots. But
hell yeah,
Brooke knows I've never worked.
Any stories like that, we got, you know, Brooke's got like 12 more of them.
Service industry for a long time. Definitely got my hands dirty in the toilets, you know, you name it.
And we'd rather not.
Tell us more about the turlet.
Tell us the poopy stories.
You guys realize that the more y'all talk about this, the happier I am. I've never worked a day in my life.
That's pretty
amazing. Cool. Work.
Yeah, hold on to that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Tim had a good idea. We should probably get to reviews.
No, I need to know how she never worked a day in her life. I gotta know. What's the secret and gimme?
I'm handicapped. I thought everyone knew this at this point.
I didn't know that.
Nah, I'm legally blind.
Holy shit.
Along with a slew of other issues with this major one. Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
Brunel is terminally forgetful.
I figured out how to spell your name correctly, I think.
No, you're still wrong every time you do it.
Two steps ahead of me.
I thought I did it right this time. Oh.
Let me scroll up. We'll check.
Everything's secret.
Pretty sure I said it right, spelled it right this time, didn't I?
I don't know. Where did you do it last time?
She was like, is Pernell okay? We're talking about...
Has anyone checked on Pernell?
Yeah,
right,
you did.
Under the... Okay.
Did you?
I finally spelled it right once.
You did it. As the official Pernell fan 420 of the group, I have spell checked this name. I can confirm this is actually Pernell's name. Great job.
Yes, I did it right for once.
So glad we have an expert on this.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Team.
I'm so proud of you. I didn't even...
So am I.
Didn't even notice it. That's on me.
Because I left an impression over years of annoyance, or
no? I just usually put an I instead of a second instead of the first L.
Okay,
or Neil.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's appreciated. You've already topped almost all of the baristas in my area.
Yeah, I get it close enough that you can figure it out. All it requires is just a little bit more.
I swear to God,
you didn't call me Bernard.
Not gonna work. I'm in here today.
Cool. If we don't get to the second one, it's fine. Just go to bed and we'll do it next week.
All right. Should we get to reviews?
Tim will kill us, so okay. Maybe.
Approved.
First game to talk about tonight is JoJo's Bizarre Adventure All-Star Battle R, developed by CyberConnect 2, published by Bandai Namco, released September 1st on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $49.99. JoJo's Bizarre Adventure All-Star Battle R captures the over-the-top art style that is vintage JoJo, allowing you to experience the JoJo universe with powerful imagery as if the manga had come to life. Tim, tell us what is going on in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure All-Star Battle R.
Oh, man, that's a big question for JoJo's, because there's a lot going on in JoJo's, but I'll cut to the chase. This review could also be like a couple sentences long, but we'll pad it out for the sake of entertainment. All right. So JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is an anime that you have probably heard of, or at least seen in memes, or you have that one annoying friend bases their entire life around the show.
Ooh, harsh but fair.
No, that's not a diss at all, because JoJo's is
it inspires that kind of passion.
All right, nice recovery.
It's absolutely just a ton of fun, and I know that things that are popular can be, I don't know, feel oppressive to get into, because just like, ah, God, the popular thing. But JoJo's is actually like a ton of fun. And there's, through its history, I feel like there's just lots of cool stuff to check out. If nothing else, if you don't want to commit to an anime, read some manga. Anyways, I found out about JoJo's through a fighting game like 20 years ago. That being the 2D fighting game on the Dreamcast. This is not that. But this is a re-release update of a different JoJo's fighting game from like 10 years ago that was on PS3, shined up and re-released here on modern platforms for your consumption. As God intended. Yeah, this is like it's mainly like a 2D fighter with like a spice of 3D thrown into it. Like maybe a little, I don't even think it's like as 3D as like Tekken, but you can like sidestep. So there is a bit of a plane. I also think it's funny that like every battle starts and like your characters are on a 2D plane that's arced like around to try to like mimic the perspective of certain panels in the comics to make the characters seem like weirdly far away from each other at a low angle. Brooke probably understands what I'm talking about. But
I haven't watched the show, and I actually understand what you're talking about, too.
Nice.
It's not just like a straight, like, oh, characters. At least when you're playing on against the computer. I'm sure it's different when you're playing two-player. It will close the gap a little bit. But, you know, against the AI, like, there's a nice big old gap there, and it's fun. I appreciate it. But, but there aren't, like your attacks don't sweep like wide to hit a opponent that's like circling around you, but the sidestep can be used for a quick dodge, and then you get in there and do some damage on that. You have, you know, a pretty solid set of like fighting game, you know, stuff in here that you would come to expect. There's combos, there's supers, there's specials, there's canceling. Most characters, so there's a lot of characters in this game. There's like 50 characters in this game, which is more than the original, so they have added a few to this one. I'm not sure exactly what ones they added. I mean, I could look up the list because the information's on the internet, but they added a few, just so you know. And it spans, you know, all of JoJo's history. Most characters are from Stardust Crusaders, I would say, because that is seemingly the most popular chapter.
What season is that?
That's three. That's chapter three. Okay. Yeah. That is what the old Dreamcast fighting game was also based on. So that is what JoJo's was and is to me, like, mostly, because that's what I was first introduced to. And now I'm, you know, finally getting around to exploring like all the other nonsense of that whole series. And the characters have different styles. Most of the characters are stand users, which means they call forth like this demon thing to assist them in battle, which can be summoned out with a touch of a button.
Like a familiar.
Like a persona, if you want. But there's other characters that have different abilities. Like there's vampire characters. The earlier characters use, I guess, Hamon is like just sort of chi energy, which is just kind of like basic fighting game energy for our purposes in this game. There's some characters that ride on mounts. That's weird, among other things in this game. So there's a good variety amongst those 50 characters. But yeah, a lot of them span the whole history. That's good. Lots to have fun and play around with. They have your modes. You have a, you know, a basic arcade mode. I guess they tossed the story mode that was in the original game, and they have this thing called All-Star mode, which basically is sort of a brief tour of the series where you will. It sets up like particular battles, like specific battles from the manga slash the show that you can play. And you'll get different rewards for them. Some of them have different modifiers on them. So it just reminds me like a little bit of the Edgemaster mode from Soul Calibur, which is always a good thing to remind me of. And then they have some just kind of like fantasy made up stuff that doesn't happen in the series, but it's just kind of like fun shit they thought would be fun, which is always good. And that takes kind of a tour of, again, every chapter in the series that's out there. And it's fun. There's a lot there. There's over like 100 different matches they have set up there. So that is good single player content to chew through. And then, of course, you have online multiplayer, which I would designate as the problem. Yeah, if you've listened to the show for a long time, God help you. You've probably heard me review fighting games before and talk about netcode, specifically rollback netcode, specifically that being the netcode you want slash need in a fighting game in 2022 in order to make it competitive online and playable online and build a community around it and like have any kind of fun online. And this game does not have that. It still has its old ass netcode from 10 years ago, which was serviceable enough 10 years ago, but things have come a long way since then. So realistically, you're not going to be having a great experience playing this game online. And when your game is a fighting game, that is a big problem.
Yeah. Is this the game they said that they were going to try going in and getting rollback, or am I thinking of something else?
I don't know. It is Bandai Namco, and they are, I mean, Dragon Ball FighterZ, which came out, I don't know how many years ago at this point, a few. I think it was 2019, actually, because the Evo that year was in person and not canceled. They finally are putting rollback into it this year.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And it's just like the thing is, like, it's so out there now that, like, this is what fans want and need in their fighting games. And some companies are responsive to that and some are not. And there's some reasons why they might not like that. I reviewed some game recently that didn't have it. Some older fighting game. I can't remember what it was. But
was it the Capcom collection?
No, it wasn't. It was something else. I want to say it was like an Undernight. No, it wasn't an Undernight game. It was. I don't know. I don't want to think about it right now. maybe I'll remember it during the next review. But I did not see plans for them to lay it in there. If they do, you know, that changes the whole game and ultimately the recommendation. But until then, this is a game. And it doesn't make the game completely worthless, especially if you live in the Venn diagram cross-section of JoJo's fan and fighting game fan, because you're going to have a lot of fun with this. Like, there's just tons of fan service in this game for fans of the series, and the fighting, like the mechanics of it, hold up well enough to be entertaining as a fighting game. Like, it's not the best fighting game I've played. Like, it's pretty standard stuff, but it is fun and much more than serviceable. And there is, you know, a solid amount of single player content there. And I think if you are a fan of JoJo's, obviously you're gonna have a lot of fun, but you are definitely limited by what that online experience is, the quality of that.
Yeah. Well, Rink, overall, the game is 50. What do you say?
I'm going to give it a try it, which, you know, skews more towards buying if you are in that Venn diagram, and much lower if you are not. Yeah, I don't know how much people outside would really get into it, but yeah, try it. Try it's the verdict.
But if they update it to rollback,
yeah, then it's more of a buy it, but it's still not, it's a light buy it, not like a crazy thing.
I think everyone that's a JoJo fan probably enjoy it, because I don't imagine too many of them are like, oh, I don't like fighting games, when that is literally what that entire anime is.
Hey, I tried to have Joe give this review to Brooke, and she was like, no, I don't like fighting games.
Wait, whoa. Okay. What I said to Joe is I haven't been into fighting games as a thing in probably over a decade. I love playing Soul Calibur as a teenager.
I think you'd like this. It's JoJo. I mean,
yeah,
that is literally all JoJo is a fighting game.
I'll probably get it. And I love shonen anime for that reason. But now that we've, you know, brought me into it, I will say that with my very pure heart, I was asked if I wanted this game first. And I know that was Tim trying to respect me as the JoJo fan.
Yes.
You know, my name is Joestar on Facebook to hide my real last name. So it's really important to me. But ultimately, I told Joe, like, this is an advanced, like, modern fighting game, and I haven't really been in touch with the scene in the better part of 10 years. And, like, hearing your review, I'm glad I didn't take it, because I may not have picked up on these things. And it kind of hurt my heart, because, of course, I kind of want the shiny, new, beautiful, like, expensive JoJo's game.
I tried getting to, I'm sorry.
No, don't worry about it. I just thought, like, you know, Tim really knows what he's talking about with this stuff. And if my love of JoJo's is pure and true, I want the fighting game guy to review it. Maybe I'll return to fighting games one day, but who knows?
It's going
to
make me cry.
Hey, don't be afraid to review games you don't know shit about, because sometimes, well, one, that opinion is also valid.
I reviewed two fishing games in a row last week.
Yeah, which was awesome, by the way. Yeah, I really appreciate that.
Thank you. So, sometimes I do like to stick my neck out there and just see like, okay, I don't know if I'll like this, but we'll try it out and we'll find out. And then I end up with that fucking weird vampire non-dating sim murder thing going on that I had back in June.
Oh my God.
Crawl back into the hole for a few months. And
I will say,
was that the,
was that my lovely wife?
My lovely wife. Yeah.
What's funny is I'm going to reference your review in my review of what is it called? Lair Land Story. It truly came full circle to me, and without sharing too much private information, I played a few hours of Lair Land Story and I was like, I wish this was my lovely wife, dude. That game looked cool. But
oh God,
we'll get there in a little bit.
The game looks really good.
Yeah, we'll get there in a couple more games, but we got to keep with the anime theme with Made in Abyss, Binary Star Falling into Darkness, developed by Chime Corporation, published by Spike Chunsoft, released September 2nd on Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $59.99. Experience the awesome power of the Curse of the Abyss, as well as the astonishing legendary entities known as primeval creatures. Prepare to glimpse the world of Riko and her friends. Pernell, what is going on in Made in Abyss, Binary Star Falling into Darkness?
Christ. Fucking names.
That is three different titles, and you will not convince me otherwise.
That's an anime show right there.
Well, I know what Made in Abyss is. I don't know about what the Binary Blood Star Dark, whatever. So, what is the game Made in Abyss? So,
fucking yeah!
This takes place in the world of the Made in Abyss games, Orth or whatever, Orth or Orth. I always get those mixed up. But the idea here is this world where, like, there's this giant hole in the ground that society has been discovered, and a society was built up around this hole for the purpose of, you know, living around it so they can go down and discover what lies within it.
You know what was in it?
A sub?
A Twitch sub by Rootbeer.
I knew it.
32nd month. Wow, that's a long time.
I don't know. I have no idea how the hell you got that sub out of there, though, because, you know, once you go down there, it's a bit difficult to get back out.
Well, it used to be an ocean, and then the submarine was there, and then it dried out, and now it's down in a hole.
Oh, but, oh my God, I had a totally perfect segue into my review to go back, and you were like, nope, subway. This is a different kind of hole, sir. This isn't one of those primeval holes that you're used to in history books. Oh, no. This is a hole where when you go down to explore it, the further down you go, the more difficult it is to get back up, and not just because of how tired you may be, but because of what is known as the Curse of the Abyss, which is mentioned in the description of the game. So, I guess the PR description. Depending on how far you go down, as you reascend from the abyss, you could be affected in different ways, whether it be something as simple as nausea and stomach aches, or insanity, or hallucinations, or in some respects, even death, all depending on how far down you go into this hole. So it's not just, you know, fighting monsters and dealing with enemies while you're going down there as an issue. It's also just the curse itself. So, now, how does this translate to the gameplay proper? Well, Made in Abyss starts out in regards to like a sort of a recap of the anime slash, I guess, yeah, the manga, because I never read the manga. I just saw some of the anime back in the day. And apparently, conveniently, through this game review, I discovered that season 2 is coming out now. So I was like, hey, I can get back into it now, which is awesome. And for those who are like, well, I'm not too familiar with this anime, will I like this game? Well, here's the beauty of it. It doesn't really matter, because at the beginning of the game, you are thrown into something basically like a starting story mode where you control Riko and eventually our friend Reg, who is met in the abyss proper. Reg is actually a robot child who thinks and feels like a human. But together, they dive deep into the abyss with the hopes of discovering the whereabouts of Riko's mother. The world of Made in Abyss is freaking bleak, by the way. I mean, I'm not going to go into specifically why, aside from just the general nature of the game, which I'm going to describe in a second. But there's a lot of tragedy that takes place in this world. It's not great. If you ever had one of those weird polls where someone's asking, you know, what fantasy world would you want to be involved in, this should be near the bottom of the list. But that's okay. So, I see, real quick, Mr., you can hear me still, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure because I got quiet and my phone made a beepy sound.
So. Yeah, the funny thing is Aki was actually asking before the show if anyone checked on you. She said, wait, there's a fucking Made in Abyss game. Has anyone checked on Purnell? I know no one in here but me probably know this, but Made in Abyss is a game about the anime of the same name, and it's basically a fantastical story of an assisted suicide of a child, and it's made of pure depression. Is Purnell okay?
And I stand by those words.
Well, I can tell you at least that part of the story doesn't come up in the recap mode that you can do, because the game, the recap part of the game cuts off at the entrance to the second, like near the end of the second layer. And after that, or actually more like halfway into the second layer. But after that, it just kind of says, okay, you're done. And then it goes into the main game proper. And
hold on a second.
Okay.
For anyone who hasn't seen the anime or anything, and you're like, well, I don't know if I want to play this since I don't know the anime. Literally, the beginning of this is the first season of the anime.
Mm-hmm.
It ends at the same point. So there you go. You can play this or you can watch the anime. Either way, regardless, it's going to be depression. So enjoy.
Funny thing. So in the game, the depression elements don't come across the same way, because the season one recap is a kind of, I guess, like a speedway through it. They hit you with like a one or two of the major plot points of the first season, but for the most part, it's like, these kids are on adventures. Look for mommy. Where'd you come from? Oh, crap. That's where I came from. Well, let's keep going down. I don't know, whatever. But the thing about it, and this is truthfully why I like this game more than I expected to, even though I already had a hope that I would like the game. And then I swear I'll talk about the gameplay, is the fact that after that intro segment of the game, what I consider to be the real game takes place, which is basically called Deeper in Abyss. What this does is it does like an Avenger original.
Huh? Nothing.
Oh, mercy. I don't even know what that was. I'm scared now. Deeper in Abyss is a second mode that takes place pretty much shortly after Rico and Reg leave the orphanage that all the kids grow up in. In which case, you start as a novice cave raider being brought into the orphanage, and your goal is to become a White Whistle. So, what is a whistle? They are ranks from like red whistle to white. Each one pretty much discerning your proficiency at cave raiding, which is exploring the abyss. And you want to advance through those ranks. Entry level is red, blah, blah, blah. You know, typical anime rank up stuff. Get the 8 badges, whatever. But in this game, you pretty much join the academy along with 2 other kids. And you slowly have to become better and better at, you know, diving into the abyss. And this is done by way of taking on quests. You start at level 1. You are given quests by the guild as well as from your homeroom teacher. And you are tasked with going down to the abyss and getting things done. And this is where the gameplay loop comes in. Because initially you pretty much have 3 meters. You have a health meter, a stomach meter, and a stamina meter. Health makes perfect sense. Stamina, pretty much also perfect sense. Your fullness, well, yeah, you know, eat food. You can get food by either scavenging for it while you explore the abyss, or also by cooking it using ingredients that you find within the abyss. You will be walking around, running, jumping, climbing up and down rock faces and ropes that you can construct and then lay out on the ground if you can find, you know, points to lower it down from. And you'll pretty much be doing all this to explore the abyss in hopes of finding, you know, one, finding your way further and further down to the ruins, 2, fulfilling quests, and 3, discovering items and artifacts within the depths. Artifacts are taken back to the town, which can be, you know, analyzed and reviewed, and through those you'll get experience points and money. And quite frankly, that's how you'll level up your character, because that's the middle of the main way. You'll get experience from beating your quests too, but you'll get a lot of it from relics. And each time you level up, you'll earn skill points, which can be applied to a surprisingly large number of environments. There's attacking-based skills, like attacking better with one of a variety of weapons, including guns, pickaxes, hatchets, bows, and arrows. You'll get better at fishing. You'll get better at crafting equipment. You'll get better at cooking food. And you'll get better at just holding your own out in the field by, you know, being better at climbing and such. But then, most importantly, the thing that you're probably wondering about is what kind of adversaries we'd be faced with down in the abyss. Well, you'll come across a number of things, actually. There'll be, like, you know, typical scurriers, like, you know, these little mute little squirrel things. But every once in a while, you'll come across something pretty massive, like a giant bull or like a flying monster or a corpse weeper and all kinds of just surprisingly bizarre monsters that you have in this game. And when you fight them, you pretty much have the means of which to roll out of the way and use one of the types of attacks that you get in the game from different weapons you get in the game. And unlike a lot of games like this, there's no fantasy means of taking them out. You won't get a super laser or anything like that. You pretty much have stuff you craft and equip and use. So it's kind of interesting that you're fighting these giant primeval beasts using a bow and arrow and a pickaxe. But there you go. That's the nature of this game. And I kind of like it for that.
Turok the Dinosaur Hunter, this is not.
Oh, no. And here's the interesting thing about this, too. The other enemy you'll be facing in this game is, like I mentioned in the description of the world, is the Abyss itself. Because as you go down, well, you'll go down. You'll just typically scroll downwards. But the moment you need to try to ascend and get back out of the Abyss, or even just reacclimate yourself on a higher elevation to go further down from like another vantage point, you'll find yourself finding situations where your body will start to feel a little weird. The screen will start to pulsate. It'll go black or green, purple or red. And that'll imply that the curse of the Abyss is taking hold over you. If you don't stop and give yourself time to breathe and relax, you'll find yourself succumbing to the effects. For example, your character might stop and start throwing up all over the place out of nowhere. And when you throw up, most of the food in your stomach comes out with it. Now, suddenly you have no food, your fullness meter is low, and you'd better have some items with you to make a new meal to eat, because nothing better than throwing up, quite like eating right afterwards, too, because, yeah, that's the world for you. but you'll find yourself being frustrated with that quite a bit, and I mean that in a good way, because that's the nature of the beast here. I mean, a lot of games when you're exploring terrain and going around, you never have to worry about something as simple as reascending. But this game has that interest element to it in itself. Because, I mean, I can't speak for Aki on this, but when I was watching Mate in Abyss, as much as I was interested in the narrative, and like she said, she's not lying, it's a pretty depressing story. But at the same time, the world they craft is a pretty intriguing one. Like, not to live in, but to read about and watch and wonder, you know, what is going on here? Like, how do the people in this world deal with this? Well,
very much so.
It's kind of nice that this game doesn't put you in the role of the main character more than beyond a tutorial environment. They put you in your role of an original person with original characters, and you have your own story that's taking place. And it's kind of nice to be like, I'm exploring the Abyss now. Oh, I discovered a new location that no one discovered before. I got experience points for discovering that location. It's a nice game to play. It's not an easy game, that's for damn sure, because between weight management and, you know, resource management and crafting your stuff and being careful not to run out of food as you're in the wrong part of the Abyss, and trust me, you will run out of food in the wrong part of the Abyss. I know, because it's happened to me. But that's part of what makes the game fun, too. Even saving the game is cool, because you can save in two places. You can save at your home proper. There are auto save points, which is like the game just saying if you die, you can retry from a specific spot and have to completely redo it. But that might not always be a great place to start from the game. But the other way you can save your game is by crafting and sending out a mail balloon. It's like saying sending a letter back home. But that counts as you saving your game in the world, which also requires resources and crafting. It has a weight level. So if you can handle 200 grams in your bag to have a save, knock yourself out. Me, I'm stingy. I might have one mail balloon in my bag at all times, unless I'm crafting it using broken mail balloons I find in the field. You find, you know, off of corpses of dead cave raiders. Yeah, this game is heavy sometimes. 12-year-old kids finding corpses and whatever. Anyway, the game overall, I'll stop rambling about. But at the end of the day, what I want to say is that, I mean, this may not be a game for everybody, but what I will say is that I do feel that I wish more anime games went in this direction, not just retelling an X arc of the show or manga, but actually saying, hey, it'd be kind of cool to just be someone else that exists in the world we created. I would like to see more games do that. It makes me more interested in playing them instead of just getting a retelling of something I've already read or watched.
No. Well, the game's $59.99. What are your thoughts?
I think it's a genuine buy. It's a good survival action, or not action, I want to say more of an adventure, survival adventure game. One that I did not expect to come out of this property, to be perfectly honest with you. So it definitely gets a genuine buy from me.
Cool. All right, next up is Ooblets, developed and published by Glumberland, released September 1st on Switch for $29.99, as well as hitting 1.0, version 1.0 on Xbox and PC. New friends are plentiful in Ooblets. Spend your days renovating your farm, raising weird little pals, participating in dance-offs, designing your house, and helping the mayor save Badgetown. Tim, what did you do in Ooblets?
I did some of that stuff. All of that stuff? So Ooblets. Sorry, I am really tired. I'm not like bored of Ooblets. It's just the hour is late. So this is a, like, I'm not gonna go into like every detail of everything you do in this game. Like,
yeah,
this
we,
is like
we originally covered this one quite a while ago when it first launched on Xbox and PC. Cole covered this one way back in the day. How is it on Switch? Does it run well on the Switch? Is performance good?
Yeah, no, it was totally fine. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it runs totally fine on the Switch. Nothing really bothered me about it. I mean, the only like slowness I felt was not in the game's performance, but in just like how quickly the character trots her ass across town at some points. But yeah, this is a like farming, crafting, town building, like cozy, throwing up the air quotes type game. Like, it's very goofy and silly and has a, you know, offbeat writing style where, like, I don't know, it just feels it feels like all the characters are just kind of lazy and weird, and like, you know, they don't call it fishing, they call it like junk trolling or something like that. Like, nothing is just everyone's kind of going with the flow of like this weird town where it's like, okay, everybody just has a little doodad, an Ooblet, that follows them around like they're Pokemon or whatever. And this is all just like totally very normal stuff in this world. So yeah, your character moves in, moves to this place of Ooblets, because she comes from a place with no Ooblets and she is restarting her life. And the mayor, is like, hey, there's an abandoned farm on the edge of town. How about you go fix that up and then fix all of our problems in this town all at once as you do. So you go and you do. And yeah, there's just like lots of different aspects to it. You have your farm space where, you know, you are going to clear the land and you are going to grow some crop, which can involve growing, you know, vegetables by any other name, and will also eventually involve growing Ooblets. And how do you get Ooblet seeds? Well, you take your little Ooblet, you get like a starter Ooblet by picking what club in town you want to join, and your little Ooblet will follow around, and then they're like, hey, how about you fuck up this other Ooblet in a dance battle? And you're like, all right, sure, this is all good. And then you battle this little turnip motherfucker into the ground, and then he gives you his seed. And then you go and plant that seed, and you water it, and you care for it. And then it will sprout into your own little other vegetable dude who will then start following you around. What's that?
I am trying so hard not to make comments with this already.
Okay. Why?
All right. Because
he gives you his seed. He gives you his
seed. Yeah. Yeah. You get a seed that you plant in the ground. I don't know what you're thinking of.
Aki, you're
disgusting.
Know
what's going on. Oh, such filth, Aki. Oh my gosh. And then you get another Ooblet. And so you get in kind of this rhythm where you're starting to fix up pieces of the town and fulfill certain goals. Like, there'll be overarching town goals for you to fulfill. And it's like, okay, well, I need to fix up this place, so I need X amount of this resource. I need to fulfill these export orders to try to improve commerce in the town, so I need this amount of this berry to sell here. You are cataloging all the Ooblets you find. You can 3D print little models of them to put in the town hall, which is cool because, you know, it's a nice demonstration of like how much you're progressing in the game, just to walk in there and see all these little models of the Ooblets you've collected in there. You are helping people out with errands. You're kind of like It's kind of like Animal Crossing and Stardew Valley and Pokemon had like a really fucking weird three-way. and out this thing came. So the dance battles take the form. They're basically, it's a card game. Basically, you are trying to get a certain number of points, and each, you have like your basic deck, and each ooblet has like a signature card, which by having them in your dance party, which you will eventually have a dance party of four that you can pick from, and you'll have like six or seven little ooblets following you around, and you can pick which little oobs you want to send into dance warfare, and they will add their cards to your deck as they go in there. And it's pretty simplistic. You're trying to get a certain number of points, and you're playing cards that will just outright increase your points. They will steal points from the other team. They will increase your hype, which makes your dance cards do more, like just gain more points, and stuff like that. It's not the most, you know, complicated or developed card game system. Like, it's pretty, just seems pretty straightforward. And you get more cards elsewhere later on in the game to add to your deck, though you can't take any out, so your deck can get kind of bloated. But it's fine, and it's kind of, you know, it's fun and goofy and colorful, but it's definitely not, I mean, to its benefit and its detriment, it is not something that's going to tax your card game brain, but it's also not something that's going to, I think, be off-putting to people who aren't as much into those types of games. So you kind of develop your town, and then like the game opens up and you kind of go to some other areas and you do pretty much the same shit. But also hang around, you know, as you explore the town, there will be like other ooblets will appear. You have to find that. That's another goal thing, is like ooblets will want, like certain items. They want to be paid off before they'll dance battle you, before they give you the privilege, you know, as it were, to battle them and receive their seed.
Nice.
So, you know, trying to track down the different ooblets, and there's different like varieties of certain ooblets that are just like kind of come in different colors. So there's lots to collect. And then you're, you know, expanding your house, making your house bigger, buying furniture for it, making that look cool, getting other farming tools that will automate like your watering, and make that more efficient as you go. It is one of those games. And I think it fulfills that game style pretty well. It's maybe it doesn't quite flow, or I don't know. It didn't like hook me like as strong as like some of those other games kind of in this weird little subgenre, but it does things pretty solidly. You know, it's fun and cute, and you will want to keep, you know, keep crafting things and hitting those goals and moving forward with the game. Something else I would say, there are times where, you know, I would find myself kind of bogged down, like on a given day where it's kind of like, well, you know, I'm just kind of waiting for shit to grow, and I feel like I've done everything in town I really can do for the day, and then I guess I'll just go take five naps until maybe one of my vegetables pops and I can advance this quest or do this, that, and the other thing. And that can be somewhat tedious, and like I mentioned, kind of the character's movement speed. Sometimes I wish she'd move a little bit faster when I'm just kind of like trying to run around town and just see what I can do and waste away some time. But I want to waste the time doing something, not just her little jogging trot. And also importantly, my kid is playing this game now, so that is always a big up in my book when a game catches my kid's attention. He was playing it today while I was at work. Because his school doesn't start till tomorrow. And, you know, I got a report on some of the things he'd done, like some dance battles and whatnot. So that's always very good for a game when it's something that will appeal to the seven-year-old child.
Nice. Well, the game's sitting at $29.99. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think it's worth it. It's not like my most enthusiastic recommendation to purchase, but if you are looking for something in that vein, it will make you happy. And it made me happy. It was a nice, relaxing thing to play this past weekend after I did a fuckload at work last week. It was nice to just kind of chill and do some silly ooblet business.
And you could pet the ooblets.
You can pet the ooblets. Yeah.
Nice.
Thank God.
All right, well, yeah. Tim, that's it for you.
Yeah.
Night night, Tim.
Going night night. Yeah, I gotta.
You earned it, buddy.
It was an early morning today, and it's going to be a late night tomorrow as I go do a wild day of work and then go watch some professional wrestling.
Well, you good enjoy luck. The wrestling and make a I good will. Sign.
I don't have time for that shit. I should have thought of that over the weekend. Then I would have been able to do it. But oh well, maybe I'll have him. I don't know. We'll see what happens. All right. Good night.
Night. We got to all help him think of a cool sign.
I always said that if I ever do one, like video game signs are the big thing that people are doing anymore.
Oh, cool.
And I want to do something like Great Greed is better than Final Fantasy X.
Wow.
Because no one knows what the fuck Great Greed is.
I have beaten Great Greed, sir. You know me.
You're one of the few. I have no idea what that is either.
I'm one of the like few, two.
The fuck is Great Greed?
It is an original Game Boy RPG.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But it's amazing and hilarious.
It's really good. Everything is food jokes.
Okay. All the names okay. are food jokes.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
All There's right. a wizard You're called Microwave.
Okay. You're getting my attention. All right. Yeah.
It was from like what the early 90s or mid 90s. Anyway, it's a video game.
It's a Namco game of all things.
It is a video game that, without going into spoilers, does feature gay marriage.
You don't have to go into spoilers. This game is how many decades the fuck old now?
30. 3,000 years
okay,
old.
Okay. Yeah. You can. Yeah. Go right the fuck ahead. Ain't anyone who's like, but spoilers is never going to play this game.
It's kind of a joke, but basically, the game gives your male protagonist, you know, at the very end, it's a walkabout ending, and the king is like, oh, you've, you know, won the day, you can marry the princess if you want, but if you, like, go around the room and talk to anybody else, they'll be like, what, are you saying you want to marry me? And you can say yes or no, and this can be, like, anybody in the room, so like male or female doesn't matter, you can
like the king himself.
Okay, king I was about himself. To ask that.
And if you and if you say yes, then the game will end with you marrying that character.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Yeah,
it's really cool.
So you know,
so spoilers. Next, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, I'm just gonna talk about Great Greed all night.
That's fine.
I'm trying to remember because I think the one thing is that you can't marry the underaged person that's in the room.
I don't remember. It's been way too long. I know I had a saved game at the very end and someone saved over it.
Yeah, I think it's like maybe when you're older or something like that. But
maybe. I don't know.
Again, it's played off as a joke, so it's not exactly serious, but it is true that you can marry another man in that game.
It is.
Progressive.
Nice.
All right, anyway, next game to talk about, Lair Land Story, developed by Circle Entertainment, published by P-Cube, released August 19th on the Switch for $14.99. Decide a mysterious girl's fate in the stunning visual novel Raising Sim. Brooke, what is Lair Land Story?
Okay, well, first thing I'm going to say about this game is it's originally released in 2007, and it does feel like it. Nothing wrong with that, but it's, you know, as soon as I booted up this game, I was like, when did this come out? And then some website was like 2020, and I was like, no, and I kept digging, and 2007. It opens up with an anime sequence that reminds me of anime, even older, kind of from the 1980s stylistically, but it isn't bad. The sequence is wordless, no dialogue. So no subtitles for this reasonably long, fully animated cinematic intro, even though this is a Japanese game. You just kind of understand what's going on as you watch. City's being attacked, but then this girl, Chilia, basically explodes with energy, stops the war or some shit. And now for convoluted reasons difficult to explain in this review, you have to raise her as your own to learn how to be a good human, or she'll grow up and destroy the whole world. Maybe.
Nice.
You can't afford to take that risk. So the sequence ends and the title flashes across the screen. Presumably the title says Lair Land Story in Japanese, but we'll never know for sure because this title screen is not translated into English, which is a hilarious start to this game, but a fair one. That makes the game sound like it's poorly localized or translated, but actually it's not. I have some complaints about this game, but title screen aside, it's mostly good in the language department. I actually think it's pretty good there. But the rest of the port to Switch, actual gameplay and game aside, I mean, localization and translation aside, I don't think they did it. I don't think they did a successful port. There's text skipping options, allegedly, with certain buttons on the Switch controller, but these buttons don't work on the Switch controller. It says at the beginning in the tutorial, you can automate or skip conversations, but you actually can't do that. So that's a pretty sloppy start to the game too, port-wise. But that aside, there's also other buttons on the game that don't work on the controller, but that only work on the touch screen, but that's not explained. And that is one of my pet peeves for Switch. It's fine, but like, tell me which buttons I can use it or not, or just play test the game and make sure the buttons work if you're going to put in the tutorial that you can use them. Just continuing to list a couple of basic complaints with the game. It's also mixed to like insanely bad. One of the characters in town just screams at you. It's way louder than the other music or the voices, which is pretty generic to even considering the time that it came out.
What do you thought right there, actually?
I kind of like the idea of somebody just screaming at you in a game for no reason at all.
And like, there are plenty of anime games where one character in town is screaming at you and no one else is, and it's not a mixing problem. If you're a Rune Factory story, we've got Porcoline. He's going to just scream at you at the top of his lungs. But it makes sense. He's got that kind of a heart. He's a great guy. But yeah, so this is a grindy management game, raising simulator plus visual novel. The premise is you're rebuilding your war-destroyed town while you raise this girl. You can send her around, make her do stuff, and she loves it, so that's cute. You can tell her you want her to go to the baths, or pray at the temple, or train, or whatever. Different stuff raises her stats. Everything she does takes time. Sometimes it's raining in town, she can't get to work, and it wastes time. You go through different seasons. Each season, you have to meet a goal, typically about rebuilding the town, or raising a specific stat for her. You do have to watch what the game calls her tension, and this is the only other part of the game other than the title screen that I thought was just really poorly translated. Tension is just really confusing, and I looked it up for other players that didn't really know what was going on either. It should be localized or translated to something like energy, or like how much she can give a shit in any given day, whether she can or she just can't even. But outside of those complaints, you know, I think this game could be cool to some people if they're really into raising simulators, because that's really all that this is bringing to the table. It's doing like a classic raising simulator anime game, plus some visual novel with stat building and branching plot stuff. But the fact that it is one of those games, and there aren't a ton of games like that out there, is the main thing it's bringing to the table. It's trying to be like Princess Maker plus visual novel, more branching plot stuff. It's trying to be like Long Live the Queen, but less story and datey than that. It's got tons of gameplay. This can be an incredibly long game. It's very, very deep and grindy. But yeah, while I think it has a place for people who are in love with this genre, I also wouldn't recommend it as like baby's first raising simulator. Mm-hmm. I would save this game for if you find that you really like this kind of old school anime charm raising simulator type game. This is there for you when you run out of this games, because you might. But unless you're that guy, this is I'm going to let Joe say the price of the game.
$14.99, your official verdict is?
It's a deny it. Unfortunately, while I do think there are people who would really love this game, and if I wanted to grind and build stats and do this sort of resource management, like I could see myself getting into this, even though it's a little dated. But even if you love that, I wouldn't recommend getting it on Switch at all in its current form, unless you're willing to overlook all the poor porting to this specific console, just because you don't want to play it on Steam and you want to play it portable on your Switch, play it on the bus or in the office. I think that's literally the only way that you should play this game.
All right. Well, moving on, it can't all be winners. Shame.
It was cute.
It looks cute at least.
Yeah. And I took it, you know, excitedly, and I gave it probably 6 or 7 hours of my life. And then just to make sure I was being fair, I have my partner play it for a couple hours because I know that he likes stuff like this too. And yeah, I don't know if it's bringing anything original to the table, but it sure is out there for you.
I just wish now, looking at the screenshots, I wish Tension just said, give a shit.
That'd be awesome, and then this would be like an instant buy it, and I would lose all credibility. But I would be cool with that.
Cool. All right. Next up is Tinykin, developed by Splash Team, published by Tiny Build, released August 30th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $24.99. Catch hundreds of Tinykin and use their unique powers to bring Milo back to his home planet and back to normal size. Pernell, what is going on in Tinykin?
Tiny Can involves you playing as a guy who is a human living on a planet that is surprisingly not called Earth, and he believes that humans did not originate from the planet of which he currently resides. So he takes it upon himself to go on a space-faring mission when he picks up a signal from someone that he believes to be associated with the original humans. And when he goes to their place, aka apparently it is Earth, he discovers that he cannot leave because his ship crash lands, and he has to find a way to rebuild it and get off this planet. But the place that he finds himself in is a house, and he somehow ends up being very, very tiny, much smaller than the resident of the house. And he's tasked with exploring this house and assisting the variety of insect residents that dwell within it. It's kind of funny that he's a human, but on this planet Earth, he's small enough. He's small, but somehow he still also has the ability to communicate with insects. But I don't care about the weirdness of it because I just like it. I like the fact that it's ridiculous.
Bugs know English. Didn't you know that?
Oh, yeah. But of course they do. If they didn't, I'd be shocked. That's how cockroaches know where we put all our food traps and also how to survive nuclear explosions. They've deciphered the codes. So what ends up happening is you're walking around these respective areas. There's a number of different houses or rooms that you explore within this house. And when you're in the house, you are pretty much left to your own devices to explore around, though you will come across people that are requesting you to assist them in some way. But the ultimate goal in each room is to find what the main character, the character that you meet when you first land, he tasks you with are as objects to invent a device that will allow him to communicate with the previous owner or the original resident, as they called him. So that's the ultimate goal in these spaces that you come across. However, each environment is actually surprisingly large and fun to explore. Your main character has a few options available to him as far as how mobility goes. He can run, he can jump, and he can kind of do like a glide by holding down the jump button. It's like he puts a bubble around himself, which allows him to glide until the bubble dissipates. And lastly, and quite possibly probably one of my favorite ways of traversing in a game in a while, he can surf on a bar of soap. he can just drop a bar of soap, and he'll just start coasting. And surprisingly, the bar of soap never completely rubs out. It's got gift to give. So you'll be using this to like pretty much travel around the map very quickly and to grind on certain objects. It's just kind of fun to do. However, I wouldn't be talking about this game well enough if I didn't describe what the namesake of the game is, and that is the Tinykin. For whatever reason, this world, in addition to the insects, has these little gloppy things that of various colors, and when you walk over them, they will burst and reveal a Tinykin. There are five of them in the game that exist, or five types, rather, and depending on which one you find, that determines what it will allow you to do. So, for example, there is one type of Tinykin that will allow you to lift heavy objects, or that will not you, allow you anyway. They can lift heavy objects. There's another Tinykin that can blow up things. Like you can ignite it and blow things up. And then there's a couple other ones, including one that lets you build like giant towers. Probably not going to go into all of them because it'd be kind of fun to discover some yourself, right? And there's only five types in the game. But the way this works is in a way similar, but not exactly the same as Pikmin. As you run around the world, you'll come across more of the little pods that they exist inside of. You'll walk over it, you'll pop it, and when you release them, they'll follow you around. As you are walking to objects that may potentially interact with Tinykin, or just find yourself in a place where you might need to use them, you can aim with the left, I think it was the left trigger, basically the kind of first person with like an over-the-shoulder throw, and then you can hit the right trigger, and you'll throw them. Sometimes you'll need a specific number of them in order to accomplish the task you want them to do, though. For example, you might come across a barrier that can be blown up, but to do so, you need 20 of the explosive Tinykin. So throw 20 of them at it, it'll blow up, it'll get out your way, and you'll be free to move on. Or sometimes it might trigger a chain effect, resulting in something like a rope falling down, or a ladder, or a ruler tipping over so you can walk up a ramp. Or maybe result in a spider releasing a web, which you can then grind on with your bar of soap. Because, yeah, I've never thought I'd say that in my life. But the interesting thing about this game is that I consider this to be one of those, like, no-frills, relaxing platformers. though you can die in some ways, there is no real sense of urgency, I'll say.
There's no penalty if you die. Like, it just respawns you.
Well, not even just the penalty, though. That is also 100% true. But it's not even just the penalty. That's more so for the platforming part. But, like, imagine if you were doing this kind of stuff and then suddenly a freaking charging bull just showed up in the floor. You're like, oh, crap, dodge the bull and run with my tiny kid or whatever. Or you have to throw your tiny kid at them to stop the bull. None of that in this game. You're pretty much running around to your own devices, discovering things as you see fit. You see something over there, can I reach it? I'll try to find out. You'll run up there, you might fall, might electrocute yourself with some water, but then, like Joe said, once you do that, you'll respawn right next to the pond of water where you electrocuted yourself at. No muss, no fuss, no time lost. Just try again. And in that regard, what ended up happening was I found myself just kind of enjoying the journey, just coasting along. Exploring the bathroom, exploring the living room, whatever. It's just kind of fun to interact with the environment and see what I can discover. I will admit that I can imagine some people would be the types where it's like, well, if there's no real aggression here, what the hell is the point of my adventure? Like, I want to face adversaries or whatever. And I get that criticism.
This isn't the game for you. And that's something I love about this game is that it's not afraid to just be itself and just be a relaxing, calm exploration of a house and just checking things out. And there's like no pressure. It's not like Pikmin where there's timers. You don't have to worry about dying. It's just a leisurely exploration game and just do what you want.
Well, yeah, this is true. But that's kind of the point I was making though, too, is just that essentially, yeah, give it a chance anyway, because even though you might find yourself wondering, you know, where's the antagonism, where's the aggression or whatever, you don't always really need that in a game that involves exploring and looking for objects and various things. And I kind of found myself feeling that way, too. Originally, when I came in this game, I was kind of expecting stuff like that, maybe fighting some giant ants or something. But the game didn't need it, which is kind of nice and was unexpected by me, too. But it didn't need those things. So if you can see yourself as giving this game a chance to just explore and experience and kind of smile too, because even all the character art is enjoyable. Like everyone's happy. Like you're stranded in this weird place and your guy's just running around smiling the whole friggin' time. he's not even remotely stressed out or you know, oppressed by anything here. He's like, oh, guess I'm going to surf on this bar of soap. And that's kind of nice. If you're okay with giving this a shot, I think you'll find yourself happily, you know, engaged in it. The only real thing I came across as far as like upgrades are concerned is when you're exploring the environments, you will come across, I guess, like balls of pollen. And there's a lot of pollen in the game. We're talking like 1,000 in a stage. You basically collect as much of it as you can. There's a guy in the main hub. He will allow you to upgrade your bubble shield thing so you can actually glide for longer, which is very useful because the initial glide wears off very fast. So you'll want to find all the pollen and you'll want to hook the guy up and get that pollen bar running. And of course, there's like other collectible type things too. But that's the main thing for upgrading you, the main character. Anyway, buy Tinykin. It's fun.
I didn't even get to ask you for the price. Well, $25. It's a buy it. You're good with that?
Yeah, definitely buy it. It's a definite buy it. And I will also say one last element to this, too, is that you mentioned Pikmin before, too. A lot of people might draw that connection to Pikmin because, you know, tiny things follow you, do things for me. But it's kind of like Joe said, too. Up until the third game, at least, one of the big turnoffs I had to Pikmin was the time pressure, night and day cycle, all that crap. You don't have to worry about that here. So I don't think this is 100% a good comparison to Pikmin. Don't just say it's a Pikmin-like or wants to be Pikmin. It's its own game.
Cool. All right, next up, we got a group review of Onsen Master, developed by Waking Oni, published by Whitethorn Digital, released Onsen. September...
Onsen.
Oh, okay. Onsen Master.
Oh, shit!
What?
Nah, I just thought it was funny. She's like, Onsen. Like, oh, shit!
all because I can't pronounce words. Released September 1st on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $14.99. Awesome Master is a hot spring customer management game where players must create ingredients to match the various customer ailments across the fantasy island of Izajima. Who wants to start on this?
I nominate Brooke because she's awesome. And she is really good describing things.
Wow, cold blood. I didn't actually take notes for this one, but
no, warm blood, I swear.
you don't need notes. You can do this. I have faith in you.
All right. Dang. So you're running a hot spring, and at first it's for these troublesome humans, but luckily soon it was also for monsters. So you have to give baths to humans and monsters, depending on what special ingredient that they're thinking of, that they would like to be simmered in the bath with them as they bathe. See, this is how bad it is when I don't write down what I want to say in advance. So then you got to lead them over to the bath. You got to take them to the bath, and you can use the right trigger or the left trigger. Or both. You can take two people to the bath at the same time. That,
or
I guess,
you just pick someone up over your head.
Oh my God. And I kept accidentally picking someone up over my head instead of picking up like two of their hands and leading them to the bath. If you want to lead two old people to the bath at the same time, it's going to be harder than leading just one. So in that respect, it's a lot like real life. They will be dreaming of what ingredient they want simmered in the bath, but you can't just pop the ingredient in the bath. You got to take it to the table, and then you got to rotate the right stick around a bunch of times until the ingredient has been prepped. I don't actually know what any of these ingredients were. I think one was a towel. What were the other ones?
There's a codex that lists what they are and what they do, but I don't remember any of them.
Well, as far as I can tell, the ingredients are as follows: white steamy towel, blue berry or gem, could be either of those, red root, or I think one of them's a green durian. And I want to think that the green the green stink lines that come off of the bath is because of the scent of the durian, but who knows? I don't know. I actually have fun with this a lot. I thought it was a cool game. It reminded me of, I really wanted to play like a cooking management, like time diner dash, like type simulator in 2020. So I bought myself Overcooked 2. I watched a bunch of gameplay and I was like, oh, I really want to play this kind of game right now. I don't always want to play that type of game, but like, I really wanted to play something that's like a time crunch for me, kind of wake me up a little. I downloaded that game and it's almost impossible to play it single player. And I was really sad because I really wanted to play it, but it's not a sustainable like play style for single player. Either that or I'm just an idiot and I couldn't do it right. If anybody else experience, dude.
Overcooked?
Yeah.
Overcooked is really hard single player.
I never got to play it with anyone until this year. And like, it's pretty fun, but I'm more of a single player game type dude, especially if it's like stressful and time crunch. I want to do that but on my own. I find that gratifying to like zen out and try to do it on my own and just kill a bunch of time that way. So this game was super fun for me as someone who always wanted that. I thought it scratched that itch really well. I thought it was really similar to that game. Only I don't have to communicate to someone to help me. I don't have to be like, go give me the towel or the red root. I can just do it all myself, which was neat. I thought the customers, at first I was like, oh, some customers are in the tutorial. They're like, some customers are really rude and they'll just barge in front of other customers. And even though those customers suck, you have to put them first because they just demand it or everything will get fucked up. And I was like, this is a really good metaphor for working in a bar and wanting to reward the customers who are nice, but you have to kind of deal with the really loud, like needy drunks beforehand, or it's going to disturb the good customers. So even though you don't want to gratify them by paying attention to them, if you're really doing this kind of game, like live in real life, you do have to pay attention. Like the squeaky wheel does get the grease, if you are familiar with that term. So I felt like it was really.
I'm sorry. I was just thinking, like, it's probably like, it's kind of annoyed by how they would do that because I'm sitting there thinking, okay, yeah, these guys are pissed off. They jump in the pool or whatever, when I'm trying to play it, set it up for someone else. But then I'm thinking, wouldn't it be nice if you could say, get the hell out? You know, I got 20 other customers here. You're the one jerk. I don't need your review. But nah, the game really wants no part of that. It wants you to give it up to them.
Yeah, and this is a customer is always right game, and it sucks because you're kind of managing these hot springs with the other monster, and he's literally like a terrifying beast with one eye, but he's your best friend. And it's like, oh, so I have a monster best friend, but he can't kill or eat the bad customers. Like, what is even the point of this?
What are you even doing?
Him being a monster.
He's so cute, by the way. I didn't get incredibly far in the game. I played it for a few hours, but I just got through that level.
I am not very good at this game. I gotta say that. I am not very good at this game. I struggle under the pressure. Like when people start barging in and I have four pools that are already filled with people and someone's waiting at the door who wants the fifth item that I don't have in a pool.
Yeah.
And you got to wait for someone to get out, and then you got to clean the pool, and then you got to prep the new ingredient and pour it into the tub. And by then the person may have left and you just lost points.
It's really infuriating in a very like delightful and real way if you've worked like these kind of jobs. But yeah, it's really frustrating. And if you're not in the mood for it, like earlier I was like, even when I'm describing wanting to play Overcooked 2, like I have to be in the right mood or that kind of game is really going to piss me off. Because you're over here trying to get people in the bath and they're mad because like the floor in the bath is dirty, but they demanded that I pay attention to them first. So now I'm just like walking through all the squalor, the floors and the bathrooms aren't clean. Not that there are bathrooms in this game, but this is just becoming very real for me with my memories here. And you just sort of push through. You're like, everything's disgusting. And I have to push through the squalor and there's nothing I can do. I have to just wait till the customers leave. I can't be like, this sucks. Everybody hates this. Like, let's just take a break. It's going to keep happening. So you have to make these horrible decisions. You're like, am I going to put the guy in the dirty bath water with the other guy that I know he hates? Or am I going to wipe the floor and make everyone wait? They're going to be mad. Listen to me. They're going to be mad if they have to wait while you wipe the floor, but they're going to be mad if they don't have to wait and they have to like, no, you guys see where I'm going with this.
There's something to be said about that too, which is kind of cool about the game. Like, and I feel this way is what in one way it kind of differs from Overcooked too. In Overcooked, I found myself always feeling like I had to be in some form of control. Like I can run this place as perfectly as can be. I have a system. Let's put it that way. I have a system. Put these vegetables here, knowing that when I'm running by, I could chop this shit up and be ready to go. Is it easy? Hell no. But I still was like, I can control it. In this game, I genuinely felt like it was making the best of a bad situation, because especially when you get to some of the boss levels, you absolutely cannot, and I'm almost positive, I'm going to ask him next week, I'm almost positive he intended for you to not be able to control it. Like, it's too much to handle. You can't mop the floor while holding someone's hand, so you're dragging someone to the bath. Get the heck out of my way. There's water here. You got to clean the floor up. You put the one ingredient in the bath for someone you're dragging over, and the jerk who wants a different thing just runs in front of you and jumps in the bath. Like, you piece of shit.
Jumps in the bath.
Yeah, now I got to clean it and change the ink because you wanted to be a badass, because you can't even mix ingredients. You put one in with the other, it contaminates the whole bath. If the guy jumps into the bath that was meant for someone else, you gotta set the whole fucking thing over. It's like,
now he's mad because the bath is dirty. It's like, bitch, you dirty as hell and you just jumped in the bath. Now everybody's mad. This game is
right, like, you stink our bath up. No one asked your ass to just run in unannounced. That's your fault. But now everyone else is pissed too.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because it does feel like we're over here bitching about it, but we're bitching about the customers. Like, to me, it does feel like this is by design. Like, in comparing it to Overcooked 2, like, even though I brought that game up first, I didn't think about that when I was playing this with my partner this year, when I finally get to play Overcooked 2. Anytime we didn't hit 3 stars, I want to restart the level because I want to do the best. I want to feel like I really beat it. This game, like, Joe, I don't think anybody's good at this game. I have so many 1-star levels in this game. Like, I'm not, like, the first time I tried to go back and get 2 stars, and I'm like, no. And the end of the level is like, I'm actively pissed off right now. I don't want to go back in there. And then I, like, load up the next level. Like, any game like this, I am obsessed with getting all the stars. If it's a Mario game, I want to get all the Yoshi coins. But this game, Purnell is very right. Like, I just sort of throw caution to the wind. I'm like, you know what? We got through the shift. We pissed some people off. Let's just look up to a new day tomorrow. Forget all this crap happened. This is traumatic.
And I'll tell you something else too related to that. So you said, like, you know, you were having trouble. You were getting a lot of 1-stars. By that same token, I was kind of just like, just do the best you can, do the best you can. And when the day ended, the place was a freaking pigsty. I had unused ingredients on the floor. And then I was like, 3 stars. I'm like, holy shit, what I did fuck? It.
That's awesome.
I got it on the giant Kappa stage. And I was just like, nice. Holy shit, I actually pulled off a 3-star. But this place does not look like a 3-star Osen. I can tell you that right now.
Maybe that's the trick, man. I got one star on the Kappa. On the big Kappa level, like whatever that guy was. I was trying to get, oh, sorry, that's my medicine alarm. Got to turn that off. Okay. I was trying to get enough stars at first. I wanted to do a good enough job, and then I couldn't beat the boss by placating the other customers. So I just said, oh, I'll get 0 or 1 stars, but I'll try to just beat the boss so I can go to the next level. Honestly thought you couldn't get to 3 stars with that big Kappa dude, but I guess the trick is to just like, know what to sacrifice. Like, you sacrifice the floors, and
I'll give you a secret, actually, though I'm not sure if he intended for this to be true or not. So on the Kappa level, when I got the 3-star rating, I did not satisfy the Kappa. So it was like, God. 3 stars. And then when it was done, I was like, oh, yeah, I beat the level and I got 3 stars. And the guy was like, you could try again, kid. Maybe you'll luck out. I was like, what the hell are you talking about? 3 freaking stars.
Best. I wonder if you can do both. I'm so going to.
Okay.
Oh, that's one thing I'm definitely going to ask him next week or whenever we do this. I'm going to be like, can you get 3 stars and satisfy the Kappa? Like, can it even be done?
someone I'm sure who would know, this is where the full disclosure of this review has got to come. The designer and producer of the game is Tim Robinson, who longtime listeners will know as the Small in Small, Medium, Large.
Whoa,
oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, this is really unexpected, because another fun fact, he is a friend of a friend of mine. So that's how I learned about the game.
He's a friend of a friend of all of ours.
Yeah.
And that is
apparently. That's what's shocking. I'm actually trying. I like this.
I'm trying to determine if this is the same Tim Robinson I know. I don't think so. Is he married to a Carolyn?
I don't think so.
Okay. That would be so. I don't think he's married at all. Up. Okay. Well.
But yeah, this Tim, he's shown the game at MAGFest a couple of times. He used to be one of our co-hosts. He probably in the 60s or 70s, he just kind of like stopped showing up. And
the decades, and Chris, not the
episodes. 1970s, yeah, and, or something else.
And yeah, Chris and I just continued on. Chris Huber and I continued on doing the show for God knows how long with everyone else coming and going. But yeah, Tim is the designer of this game, and I don't know if he's going to join next week. He's invited. I know Leo, the designer, the engineer or programmer, I'm not sure what his roles are. We'll find out next week. But he'll be coming on to chat with us about the game. Tim lives with him, so I don't know if they're both going to show up. We'll find out. But
well, Tim, if you're ever listening to this after the fact, the design of this game is fucking on point. Like, that map alone, where you navigate through the first 3 levels, that's my shit, man. And not just because I'm a weeb. Like, it looks really good, the art direction, and like, the active, proud to say it. It looks damn good. I am impressed.
Well, I'm a weeb, I guess, in some factions, and I also like it.
Nice.
Well, the game is sitting at $14.99. What does everyone think of it?
I think this is a solid buy it.
I'm going to agree with Brooke on that buy it status.
I also played it, although I did not give my opinion, apparently.
Oh, what did you think about it, Chris?
I'm just going to sum it up and say that this is the kind of game that you're going to want to take a smoke break out in the back.
Very true. And depending on what is in that smoke, you might be better or worse at the game when you come back, but it might be more fun too.
Yeah, it does bring about that old, you know, service industry kind of stress, but in like that kind of way that you're like, it's okay because it's a video game, and you know, I'm not getting paid $6.15 to deal with this.
Oh God.
But yeah, no, I also give it a buy it. It's very good.
Nice. Well, we will talk about this game more next week when Leo comes to join us, and we'll move on. Next game to talk about is Fairy Elements, developed by XCreate, published by Chemco, released September 1st on Xbox, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, Windows 10, and Steam. For $14.99, Yamato, a royal knight, saves his kingdom with the power of a sword imbued with a mysterious power, but is transported to a world 200 years in the future. The power of a sword imbued with power. Okay. He meets a strange creature and a mysterious girl there only to be involved in a greater destiny awaiting at the end of his adventure. Chris, what is Fairy Elements?
Okay, Fairy Elements. This is the kind of like the new Kemco X Create Jam. So first time listeners should know that the Kemco, the long time publisher of video games all the way back in like the NES and even that kind of 80s era. They started doing mobile RPGs starting with, and I don't know about starting with, but like, you know, they started the Alphadia series and the Alta Vista. No, I'm just kidding. Alvastia Chronicles and like whatnot. All kinds of A games. Lots of, for some reason, As Divine Everything. They come out with these RPGs just about like clockwork every month. And, they now have a pretty quick chain, like a pretty quick like kind of assembly line from getting these games out in Japan and then getting them over to the US. So even though we kind of have to play catch up sometimes, like sometimes they'll release a game from like 2013 and it'll be the new game, quote unquote.
I know a lot of these begin life as mobile games as well.
Yes, I would say all of them. But yeah, you're right. But still, all this to say that sometimes we do tend to get the fresh, hot stuff, and that is what this game is. So if you're used to the Kemco X Create like RPG kind of presentation, it's usually a pixelated but 32-bit look, something that would have been at home on the PlayStation or something akin to a little bit above like a Super Nintendo thing, but kind of has that flat RPG Maker look to it as well. Well, this game has those bones, but the actual aesthetics of it have been fully upgraded to an actual hand-drawn look in the battles. You actually have smooth lines, no visible pixels, but like actual drawing and shading, and like monsters are incredible. Some of them
all like hand-drawn sprites. They look really good.
Yeah, some of them, like even common enemies, will actually take up the entire screen. And so, you know, they've really upped the scale on the presentation of this game, which is important for a series like this, or, you know, a developer like this, because, you know, again, their thing is quantity, for sure, like with a capital Q. And the story...
Again, this is like a decade worth of RPGs that they have that have been coming to console. So a lot of them have been around for a while. We're just getting them now.
Exactly. Like, we get them from all eras, but, you know, so it's kind of important to note in these reviews, like, whether this is, like, a newer game or, like, a rehashed, you know, 10 years ago RPG, and this is newer. Another way that they innovate is through mechanics, which we'll get to in just a moment. One way they almost never innovate is storyline. And this is no exception there. Your story is that you are a guy, a male protagonist. Your male protagonists are either enthusiastic heroic types or just like unmotivated misanthropic types. There seems to be hardly any in between. And in this game, you are the heroic type. This is a, you know, easy to get along with guy who's just trying to do his best. You start off the game, actually, interestingly, you know, these games hardly ever feature prologues that are playable. But you actually get to start the game with your dude and the second character, which is always female. And you get to basically start in level 55 and, like, do 10,000 damage worth against, like, the final boss, quote-unquote. But then when you defeat the final boss, which, by the way, gives you, like, this nice preview of how big and awesome the sprites can get, you get thrown 200 years in the past. And now your guy has to try and find the lady. And his clue is that she may have mentored this other lady who joins your party, you know, basically as soon as you start the game. And you also meet a mysterious creature who just wordlessly joins your party. And, you know, the there's always like a, not always, but like a trademark of the, one may even say a cliche of the Kemco X Create RPGs is the weird looking character that probably is going to end up being some kind of deity or something. And they're so aware of this now that these games, you know, they're like 30 games in at this point on just this kind of story that, you know, They're like, oh, who is this character? It doesn't even look like any kind of animal on Earth. And, like, you meet this other guy. Like, you always meet another guy who's just kind of a nondescript, or they've got, like, one dimension to their personality. And this guy is being rude. And so he's just a rude guy with a gun. And, you know, we like guns, so, like, he stays. But, yeah, he just every line, he just says something unnecessarily rude. So that's his. And it's like, you know, you're trying to take over, or you're trying to reclaim, as like one of your first quests, you're trying to reclaim this kingdom from the monsters, and the demoniums or whatever they're called, as opposed to like the humaniums or whatever they're called. You know, they make up these races and stuff. But anyways, and he's just so obviously like trying to, he's like, well, I heard the prince survived, but is now missing. Wherever he is, he must be, like, you know, it doesn't matter because he doesn't have a kingdom to rule, I assume. I wouldn't know because I'm definitely not him in some kind of disguise. It's just, it's so funny. Like, the tropes, the game is now, like, kind of playing with its
self-aware.
Own trope. Either that or just being the person in the unique position of playing 150 of these games. Like, I'm just kind of... Thank you. Being in the somewhat unusual position of having played like 150 of these games, like I'm just starting to maybe see the cracks. I don't know, but I found myself amused. So you know, that's the story. It's you're basically going around trying to destroy evil, collecting your people, and you know, going around, you know, visiting the local town, clearing out the local dungeon. So in this game, what they really lean on. As the new thing, and this is like where I'm trying to catch like another breath, is the mechanics. So the mechanics do tend to change and or alternate in these kind of games. And in this one, they're kind of doing some different things. So usually in a Chemco X Create game, there is a system whereby your equipped weapons, you know, you just equip a weapon like any JRPG, but... Let's say you got a stronger weapon. Well, then you can choose to have that stronger weapon actually consume the weaker weapon and then become even stronger. It's a way to like kind of clear up your inventory and stuff.
Good old weapons eating weapons.
Weapons mechanic. Eating weapons is what I have termed it. And this game actually has something a little bit different. This game has a skill tree upgrade system for weapons where you can change their very nature by giving them certain components that you get dropped from battles, found in chests, you know, gambled for, because there is a gambling system in here, which we'll get to. Or, you know, you can sell off your old weapons for a special currency called coins, not gold, not jewels, not lottery tickets, a fourth currency called coins.
Oh, jeez.
And with those coins, you can then purchase, like, a la carte, the kind of components that you would need to basically set your weapon on the path of becoming like a master weapon, which is great. You know, like it gives you more variety, more choice. But it is a bulky system. The game throws about 20 tutorials at you about this. They literally put in a character with a name and a backstory just to come up to you every once in a while and be like, by the way, I still need to explain this about weapons to you. And they awesome. Literally, they even give her a single quirk like they do in, like they usually would give like an actual full-fledged party member. Her quirk, besides being an adult who looks like she's 12 years old, which is usually disturbing, but Chemco X Create games, they're so lacking in any like sexual anything that you're just kind of like, okay, whatever, this is just something they decided to say. She likes seafood ice cream, and so she describes it all the time in a way that's kind of unnatural. So there's your character there, and she explains about swords all the time. And so yeah, there's the weapons upgrading into stronger weapons by use of components that you collect in various ways. And then there's the cauldron system, wherein you can put your weapon, either the one that you're using or not using, just depending on if you're going to need it, you can put it into a cauldron that can be unlocked with the game's jewels, which are their gambling currency, and in real time hours on a counter, it will upgrade your weapon by a certain amount. And so you can just kind of maybe have one sword that you're using, but keep another on the back burner and just keep popping it into that cauldron and waiting 6 real world hours and then popping it back out. It's now 20 points stronger, and you know, you could do it again, leave it on overnight, whatever. That's a thing which harkens back to the pottery system, the gardening system that other games have, but now it's just straight up putting your weapons in a pot until they get strong, whatever. And then, yeah, the weapons now have slots which can be equipped with certain other items that you pick up, and those will actually teach you skills, and it's basically the materia system. This game has the materia system. Like, they literally, they call it the material system. Like, it's such a ripoff that it really, they just added one letter to the Final Fantasy VII system, and then we're like, this is what it is. So that's actually really good, because the materia system is one of the most celebrated upgrade systems in RPGs, so I cannot fault them for going that way. And yeah, past that, it is a Kemco X Create RPG through and through. Music's amazing, although, you know, you hear the same chuggy rock guitar, like, music in every dungeon, and it does start to kind of be like, okay, well, this is going to be the dungeon music. It's more exciting than other Kemco X Create games, but I did find by the third or fourth dungeon, I was like, okay, we're here again. The other thing is that enemies are now 100% on map. And they actually have a detection system, whereas there will be a grid of lit up tiles in front of the monster. And if you step on one of those tiles, you get into the confrontation. And so you can now avoid enemies if you so desire. And yeah, they kind of like, you know, they'll look around, and so those tiles will kind of shift around and stuff. So, you know, you can kind of dodge them or whatever. And if the enemy has some kind of special thing, like it'll maybe give you double gold or like a rare item or something, it'll actually just say that over the enemy's head.
Nice.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's kind of like, well, this doesn't really, you know, doesn't really envelop me in the world of this game. But again, it's a self-aware move. This game knows that people play it for like, you know, they don't play it for the bare bones story so much. They play it just to like get through it and to like kind of play around with like the new systems and mechanics and stuff. And, you know, that's good enough for a JRPG.
Well, the game's sitting at $15, like pretty much every other Kemco RPG. So what do you think of it?
Yeah, this should get your $15. I would say before most of the As Divine games, maybe not the Alphadia games. I'm a little more fond of those, but yeah, as far as Kemco X Create goes, this is a bold experiment. I think that all the moves that they do are solid. I didn't find any, you know, anything in the game that really slowed me up that much. I do kind of appreciate this new system. I will say, however, the lottery system is entirely OP. You start the game with 1,000 gambling crystals, which gives you 11 rolls to get, like, you know, new weapons, and I did that, you know, as soon as I bought, like, a couple of things, I saved up to get 1,000, and then I rolled 11 times. Two of them were top-tier masterclass weapons for two of my characters, so those characters don't need any more weapons for the rest of the game.
Wow.
And that was in the first 30 minutes. So, you know, maybe if you want to retain some challenge to the game, don't put it on easy mode and spend all your gambling at once. Maybe use that for different things to kind of build yourself up a nice challenge thing. So,
cool. I don't know.
But yeah, it's a buy it. It's a buy it. Go ahead and buy it.
Sounds good. All right. Forgot to say this earlier, but Brooke, you're done.
I wanted to hang out for one more. I want to hear about the Sperry game. No. I mean, you told me a few weeks ago, you're like, if you ever need a drop, drop. So I thought I'd just hang out to the end to say goodbye. Because I also wanted to share the latest Jose Canseco tweet I enjoyed.
Ah, sweet.
In which I learned that you can spend a weekend with me, Jose Canseco, for golf, dinner, poker, bowling, and Q&A. Call Mike McGuire at 571-215-1147. He just tweeted this, and then he tweeted, quarantined, a great time.
Jeez.
And I haven't heard that one before. Anyway, it needs to light up our lives. I just want to share that with you. And I also had to tell Chris, it's of course like drinking a drink and commuted, but really enjoyed like capital Q and quantity. That was really good. That made me snore, dude.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that. A quarantined good time.
Oh my God. All right. Good night, you guys. I'll talk to you next week.
Nighty night, Brooke.
Good night. Later. Next game to talk about is Censo Club, developed by Pixodome, published by Curve Games, released September 1st on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $14.99. Aliens are attacking. Who will save us? Censo Club will. Using chainsaws, hammers, and the aliens' own life force against them, these fearless warriors will pulverize enemies on their way to victory. Go solo, go co-op, go hack those aliens in this action-packed side-scrolling platform brawler. Pernell, what is Censo Club?
Honestly, not so much a side scroller, except for one bonus game. But the idea behind this game is that you are controlling one of five different girls, of which are unlocked as you progress through the game, as you go through a series of stages, culminating with a boss encounter. The logic behind this is that each of these characters came in contact with this alien life force energy, and once that happened, they were infused with power, which is why they're able to now fight said aliens. You are controlling them in a way where that you have a light attack button, a heavy attack button, a dash, and that may well be it. Because there's no like hypercharge attack or anything like that. At least not that I know of, because I say this despite having only discovered the freaking ground dash attack that one of my characters had a couple days after playing the freaking game, so... Who knows? Maybe there's a move I don't know exists in the game. Let me know, devs. Let me know. Anyway, as you play the game, you'll go into a stage. And stages in this title are broken up between, say, two phases. Each phase having three sections. And each of those sections has three individual screens of which you battle on. And these will pop up onto the screen, attack you en masse. They come in a variety of different colorful forms, and you are pretty much beating the snot out of them until you clear the space and move on to the next room. There are no pickups in this game with the exception of one, and that is health. So whenever you kill an enemy, they'll drop health items for you. If you don't need health, it'll just kind of float there. Otherwise, pick it up, restore your health. However, while there is no money in this game particularly, what ends up happening is every once in a while a shop will appear at the end of a stage clear or room clear, I'll call it. And when you enter, the vendor will be selling a variety of different augmentations for your character. Something like me, for example, faster dash, stronger attacks, more hit points, or a few other things which I'll describe shortly or mention or how to get them shortly. But you don't pay for these things with money. You pay for them with the life you've been collecting from the aliens the whole time. So the game kind of has a risk-reward system in place where you might see a bunch of items on the shelf you want to acquire to make your playtime a little simpler and easier, but by doing so, you'll be selling life, which you might need for the next room, or even worse, if a boss shows up sometimes. In addition to the shop, you'll occasionally come across a few other odd events. You might come across the cool bus, which is the side-scrolling element of the game I was talking about, where you'll get on there, it'll ask you to collect as much blood as possible before you die or fall off the stage. Most likely fall off the stage because you can't actually take damage there. So you'll be doing that, and depending on how much blood you collect, that determines the bonus rewards you get at the end of the level. Also, you'll come across individuals sometimes, and each of those individuals might give you some sort of, let's call it a side quest of sorts. Maybe like say for cleaning a room space or dealing with a negative effect for a series of rooms in the stage. If you're able to take on their request and fulfill it, you will get some items as a reward, and you will also unlock them on what's called the Chirp Network. There aren't too many of these characters in the game. You can unlock them pretty quickly, I'll say. But once you unlock them, you'll then be able to use the Chirp followers, I'll describe that in a second too, to acquire currency to purchase either permanent upgrades or upgrades that you can eventually find as available in the shops going forward. So, how do you get Chirp followers? Well, aside from the fact that you might occasionally come across getting them from certain requests that you fulfill within the stages, or from a particularly awesome, beatdown session you provide within the stage, you can also get them by the end stage bonus mission. At the end of every level, you'll be requested with taking photos with the paparazzi by being in the frame of the shot and performing an action at the time the camera film shot takes place. However, while this is all taking place, you'll be getting accosted by a ridiculous number of Censo fan followers, basically fanboys, They will try to grab onto you and essentially pretty much prevent you from doing any of your moves that you want to be fulfilling while your photo is being taken. It was fun to do that mode at that mini game at first, but over time it got to be a little annoying. I wish I could ignore that bit because it's, I don't know. But aside from that, I honestly found the game to be pretty fun. It has some downsides to it, most notably being the fact that I wish that the power-ups you could acquire sometimes affected the way the actual Chinso girl performed, because each of the girls has their own, like, three stats that they have, like, you know, their own speed stat, power stat, and defense stat, or whatever. They have their own move sets. But what you see is what you get. Once you unlock and start playing as a Chinso girl, what she is doing is what she'll always be able to do. And none of the stuff you buy at the stores will have you going, well, now my chainsaw girl has a super chainsaw whirl, or now my magic girl can summon more demons. It's like, no, you are pretty much just stabbing them up. But, you know, and also I wish there was a little bit more room variety, because you die a few times on the stage, you'll pretty much seen everything that level has to offer. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take long for it to reset. But with that said, during my time playing the game, I've continued to have fun with it. It's an enjoyable romp. The characters are different enough that they're fun to play as, and you'll end up having your own personal favorite Chinso girl. I just feel like this one was going to really need to add more to it. And quite frankly, I would not be surprised if they do down the line add some DLC or just free updates to the game or something, because it could benefit from that. But as it stands, it's still fun. And the music, I should note, is actually really good. I like the music in this game very much. But I'll stop rambling now because I've talked about this game a fair bit. So,
well, it's $15. What do you think about it?
I would give this game a solid try, because while there are a lot of games on the market that do the whole, you know, room-to-room beatdown, roguelike power-up acquisitions or whatever, I feel like the aesthetics to this game lends itself more to this, that it can find its own fan base even beyond the crowded marketplace for this style of game. And like I said, it's actually pretty fun to play too.
Cool. Well, how about this? It is on sale on Xbox for another week for $11.99. What do you think of that?
I'd still say it's a try, but it's even more of a try because it's more affordable.
Yay. All right. Next game is Restless Soul, developed by Fuzz Games, published by Graffiti Games, released September 1st on Switch for $14.99. The adventure of a afterlifetime awaits. Help a wayward soul return to the land of the living in this hauntingly humorous comedy adventure that pokes fun at life, death, video games, pop culture, and everything in between. Chris, what is Restless Soul?
Oh, dear. Okay, so Restless Soul is it's basically a twin-stick shooter with, walking and talking simulator-like elements. Or maybe it's the other way around. It could be walking and talking and then occasionally shooting, but you know, I haven't gotten to like the more intense parts of the games. You play as a ghost. You name yourself basically, like you do come up with a name, but it's very clear that you are acknowledged as like a kind of other essence. You're a ghost, like old school, you know, just a sheet with two holes, you know, punched in it. You talk to Death, who is like, oh, hey, welcome to the afterlife. I'm Death, and you're dead, so here you go. have fun. And then your guy's like, well, actually, I want to go back to the land of the living. And Death's like, I don't think you can. But then you find out that there may actually be some conflicts surrounding like your death and like your mission. And so while the game doesn't give it away, literally because it says, because that would be spoilers, you basically now have to go through the world of the big bad guy whose name escapes me, because I didn't have the game open. That's my fault. But
Dr. Krull,
that is his name, yes. And you have to venture through the land of Dr. Krull collecting 8 keys in 8 different towers in order to do a thing and basically they give the excuse that like, why 8 keys? Because if it was 1 key, then the game would be too short. So it's that kind of game. It's very self-referential. Everything's a joke. However, I've always said that like games can get away with that as long as the writing is good and the jokes are good. You know, see something like Earthbound. Earthbound constantly refers to like the player and the fourth wall and like, you know, talks about, you know, different things like that. And, you know, it's one of the greatest games of all time. So this game, I don't know that this is one of the greatest games of all time, but I will say it effectively balances humor with just kind of, you know, giving real fuck off instructions for everything, you know, just basically saying do this because we say, you know, and it, man, this game is full of text as far as like talking to characters go. Some of them will say different things depending on when you talk to them. You can find a whole library, like every bookshelf has a book with a joke title or some kind of other joke in it. And it's just like, geez, you know, like it really, they lean on the comedy part of the game. They really do a lot of world building in terms of like just making the afterlife a fun place, even though it is monochrome. There is no color in this game. And the soundtrack is what I would like to call kind of dour. It's like dour chiptune, if that makes any sense. Kind of rainy day lo-fi Game Boy sounds. I like it. I mean, I dig it, but, and it does kind of offset like the fact that this game is constantly joking at you. And I mean constantly. Once you get into these dungeons, then it becomes, you know, like I said, the perspective of the game is that it's 3D, kind of rudimentary 3D, but you're still moving around 3D, but everybody else is 2D, paper cutouts style sprites. So, like voxel, you know,
style graphics.
A little bit voxel, except that, you know, like I said, the characters are completely flat.
Yeah.
But voxel backgrounds and elements. And so you're moving around that in 3D space. And then it, like I said, the actual action part of it is that you get into a room and everybody announces their intention to shoot you or not, or, you know, they make some kind of joke. And then you basically do the twin stick shooter thing where you dodge lots of bullets and return fire until all the enemies are gone. You can pick up potions and, you know, help yourself there. The game is actually not that hard, and we're going to get to that in a minute. Yeah, like I said, you basically blast through the enemies. There's some other elements as well. For instance, every town has a set of letters that you can collect in hidden areas. And if you collect all of them, then that will give you a reward, like increasing your health permanently. There's also, because you get an afterphone, which is like basically just an iPhone for the afterlife, you can take selfies in the game anytime you want.
Nice.
And like your character, you know, actually is in there and like you can angle it and all this other stuff. So like, I don't know what the use of that is, but you can look at those selfies anytime and it's very charming. I like it a lot. And of course, the phone also acts as your menu and your options. So what I like about this is that this game really does kind of realize, I think, that its strength is in the fact that you are going to want to get through all eight of these areas, read every little corny joke, and some legit good ones. And you know, so they don't want the gameplay to get in the way of that. So you actually have the option at any point in the menu to raise your player strength by 1x, 2x, or 3x. You can also just turn on God mode. So if you want to just get through the game, huh?
I love games that do that. It's,
yeah,
like it, I know it's labeled as accessibility these days, but I love it. I love having the option to make the game easier so I can just get through it at my own pace.
Yeah, it turns the game into like basically, I just want to read this game, yo. I find the most entertainment through reading. I'm not good at shooters, or I don't care about shooters. So yeah, I'm just gonna skip all that and just go, you know, through the game and read it and enjoy it that way. And this is the kind of game that I would do that myself just to get all the content in if I, you know, was pressed for time. But I actually like twin stick shooters, and I think that the action of this game is pretty solid. You know, I didn't get any like super upgrades or anything like that. I didn't choose to upgrade myself. I kept myself at 1x damage. And, you know, fighting regular enemies and bosses and stuff presented, I would say, like a medium challenge. Nothing too, you know, crazy or anything like that. But maybe the game does get crazy, you know, towards the end or something. I don't know. Either way, I'm looking forward to it because I definitely intend on playing this one all the way through because I would love to see what all this game has to say. And, of course, they, you know, they didn't spoil the ending for me, so I guess I got to get there, too.
Well, the game's $15. What do you say?
Absolutely. Go ahead and buy this one. This is this game is deceptively better than you think it looks, because, you know, indie games, especially humorous ones, especially ones that are kind of couched in like shooters and stuff, you know, some of them have a little bit of a try hard element to them, and they don't really seem to have, you know, all that much care taken to them, so they get easily overlooked. This game, I don't think you should overlook. I really think people should give this one a chance. And like I said, if you don't like shooters, skip the shooter section and just read the game, because like I said, you have that option. Nice. So yeah, buy this one, please.
All right, and it is also on sale for now for $11.99. I can't tell how long that sale's lasting, but I would imagine it's at least one more day. So if you buy it today,
then the sale lasts until you buy it.
There you go. Good shit. One final review tonight is for the Revo official soundtrack composed by Drew Van Camp, released March 24th on Steam. August 20th. Why the hell do I have March? I think that's when the game released.
Second time you've done that, too.
I'm doing great tonight, by the way. It released as Steam on Steam as DLC for Revo and also on Bandcamp for $6.99. Revo is available on Steam for $14.99. Revo's synthwave soundtrack is composed of electronic textures, pulsating beats, and synthesized sound waves. Enjoy modern production with a refreshingly retro-futuristic taste as you battle through a sinister space storm of music. Brunel, what did you think of the Revo soundtrack?
I liked it. It was nice to play around with while working at my office. Like, it's one of those OSTs where, first and foremost, when it comes to any video game OST, I feel like it generally seems it hits better when you've actually played the source, because it kind of resonates with you in a different way. You know, that's how a lot of RPG or OSTs made it to where they are now, to be honest with you, because people were like, oh, I love this fight. This track plays over it. Bam, it's good. But this OST being a synthwave OST, it still comes in with a decent level of quality, which makes it very appealing when you're doing other tasks. It plays over, you know, cleaning the house, or like I said, I played it while I was working in my office for 2 days, and it was good music for that. My go-to track, though, and I felt like this is because it probably sounded differently, or it had more of a oomph to it than the rest of the OST, was a track he has on there called Synth Hop. Solid fan of it. It's funny because you're like, review this? You want to review this OST? I'm like, sure. But I'm like, I don't know how to really go on like massive bits about an OST, but what I can tell you is that I feel as though this is something that is good as a nice damn soundtrack or beat for when you're doing something around the house. You're not going to sit there and like kind of stare at the ceiling and listen to this, but you will listen to it while you're engaging in other activities. It gives a bit of a pulse, if you will, to your activity. So I don't know. I think you said it was $6.99?
Yep, it is available as DLC on Steam. And it is also available on Bandcamp for $6.99. You get nine songs out of it.
I do think it's worth that cost. Like I said, I gave him each two listens a piece. And just by the amount of time that takes, I got my money's worth. And the music's good, too. So there you go.
You have a favorite track? You said you like synth hop?
Synth hop is my favorite.
Cool. Well, that leads into the end of the show. We will finish the show with some music from Revo. We'll play synth hop. And that's it for this episode. We made it through.
Nice. I actually I played through an entire game of Mega Man 3 while we were doing this episode.
Nice. Pernell, what did you play through?
not much. I just was clicking through menus, to be perfectly honest with you.
I heard you clicking through something during your reviews. I know you were playing something.
At one point, I was playing around with Chinzo Club a little bit because the game is still fun. Like I said, I enjoy just dying because I die a lot. I died even on like the freaking, not the base mode, but like I've tried casual at one point thinking, okay, I should play casual just for the sake of getting the review over and done with. And it was like, casual, you'll die sometimes too. Like the platforming isn't so bad, but the bosses, if you're not aware of their patterns, they'll still wreck your face. So, but yeah, that's me. That's Chinatown.
Nice. Aki, did you play anything during the show or were you just sitting there the whole time?
I've been playing White Day.
Nice.
Is
that the Labyrinth named School?
Yes.
Well, you'll have to tell me what you think of that later, because I have it. I bought it when it came out on PS4. If you know me well
you'll
enough,
you'll hear on Thursday.
Yeah. Stay tuned, folks. Yeah, don't want to give anything away. That's the end of the show. Does anyone have any final words to end it?
It's a nice day for a white day.
That was awful. Sure. That was just awful.
Yeah, it's a nice day for a white day.